welcome to Thursday, December 27, 2018. It is time for some Throwback Thursday. Can you feel me? Okay, that may be a little too much. Welcome. We're doing our Throwback Thursday today. And I've only done one of these before, so I'll explain what Throwback Thursday is. Throwback Thursday is the time in which I go through my comic book collection and pick some outstanding books that I haven't read in a long time, and I talk about them. Now, I don't know what the criteria is going to be for this. It may be older than 10 or 15 or 20 years. Today's book is much older than that. Today, we are talking about Prime, issues 1 through 6. Prime, of course, being one of my favorite books that came out of Malibu Comics. So if you were around in that era, then I hope that this will bring back some fond memories of an era gone by. And if you've never read any of the Prime books, and I highly recommend you do, they are fantastic. I can't remember how many issues there are. It's like 20, 30 issues, something like that. It ran from June of 1993 until August of 1995 and was replaced by a new Prime book in 1995, which is good, but not as good as the original. Now, of course, if you want to catch up on Malibu, you can go back to a couple weeks ago. I did an episode on Malibu Comics. I talked about Prime and Strangers and Hardcase number ones. So you may find some of the information familiar in this issue because I guess this could be an issue of the podcast. And I'll recap issue one as well. But Prime is one of my all-time favorite Malibu comics. It is one of my all-time favorite comics, period, because it was really fun. And it came around at a time in which I was really, really, really into superhero comics. The era between, I would say, 91 and 94, 5, were some very fond memories for me. It's when I discovered my first comic book shop. I began reading comics about in 91, but I found my first comic shop, matter of fact, in 1993. So right before this book came out, I think May 93 is when I would have found it. That was Exo Manowar number 0 from Valiant Comics. I may do a Throwback Thursday on Exo Manowar at some point, but this is fantastic. But of course, if you listen to the Malibu episode, you may remember the stuff that I talked about on Malibu. If not, Malibu was a very innovative company that they had a lot of great books. Prime, of course, being the best, as I said. But a lot of great books, and unfortunately, they're not around anymore for a variety of reasons. Marvel owns all the IP, and they will never put out a Malibu comic ever again. I think like 10 years ago, Joe Quesada, when he was editor-in-chief, he said that they were planning on relaunching Malibu. That, of course, never happened. And we hear that kind of stuff all the time, right? We've been, I think a lot of us that grew up in that era have been waiting for the return of Milestone, for example. That's been pushed back several times by now, and we'll see how that goes. But let's talk about Prime, and why Prime, to me, is one of the essential books of the Malibu Comics era, and really comics as a whole. It is written by Len Strasinski with Gerard Jones as well, so co-written. Art by the incredible Noam Breyfogle. And yes, Noam was a terrific artist on Batman and Detective. But really, I really began to know Noam a lot more when he began working at Malibu. Because the Batman stuff he was doing was really before I started reading comics. I think he jumped off pretty much as I was getting into comics. So really, my introduction to him was in Prime. I did go back, of course, and get all his Bat Family stuff. And he also did some work over at Valiant. He did the Bloodshot series there for a little while, introduced some interesting characters there as well. And of course, Noam has a very distinctive style, and I think it works extremely well for this particular book, and we'll talk about why. The letters are by Tim Eldred and cover design by Paul Mounts. And we're going to talk about the 6 issues of this particular series. Again, if you've never read these, I recommend you do. I guarantee you can go to your comic shop and pick these up for a quarter apiece. So, you know, some of you talk about how expensive comics can be. Go back and check out some back issues, man. Let me tell you, there's some great comics from back in the day. And I hope that this Throwback Thursday series has you wanting to go back and check some of that stuff out. I mean, you can go to madcomicshop.com, I guess, and pick these up for probably more than that. They're probably like $1, $1.25, $1.50 a piece. I didn't get a chance to look. But I recommend you do. They're really fantastic. And let's talk about it. Prime is, I think, a little different than the majority of the Malibu Ultraverse. It is also very different than most superhero comics. But I think what makes it great is that it has this feel of, like, Silver Age comics that I really enjoy. And, of course, brought up to a modern era. So there are some things that, you know, as you're reading this, you may find some of the language a little odd. You may find some of the events that are presented here a little dated. For example, you know, we have Prime going to Somalia to fight some Somali insurgents. That was kind of a thing in the early 90s. Bill Clinton makes an appearance in this book. I think it's issue 4 or 5. We'll get to that when I get there. I actually have notes for this. I took notes. Can you believe it? I did. It's true. It's true. I wanted to make sure I caught every single thing in here. So there will be some notes. I'm not going to post the notes online, but if you request them, then I'll be happy to email you. They're actually extremely simple. So you're not going to get any more of the notes than you will out of this podcast. But what's really cool about Prime is that, I mean, in its core, it's a kid. And I think that's what's cool. That's what resonated with me back then, because it is a kid whose superpowers are based on superheroes that he grew up watching and reading about and loved. And of course, some of them are connected directly to the Malibu universe, like Hardcase. Again, you can go back to my Malibu episode from a few weeks ago and learn a little bit more about Hardcase. But he's one of them. We learn about Maxi-Man, who shows up in this particular book. That is one of his favorite cartoons growing up. And it's kind of a mix of like Thor's and He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. Pretty interesting, pretty cool. A little dated character design, but whatever. It's still fun. And so he's a kid, and he has to deal with a lot of kids' issues. So if you're a fan of, say, a book like Shazam, Captain Marvel, then you might dig this. And I'm not talking about the newer stuff, the Geoff Johns stuff, for example. I'm talking about, like, old-school stuff. In fact, I would say even, oh, man, what volume was that? I think there was a Captain Marvel book in the 80s, late 80s, that really reminds me a lot of this particular Prime series, because it does have a little bit of a darker tone in many respects, and you don't kind of really see that as you begin reading Prime, but once you kick into, like, issue, I mean, I would say issue 4, there are some darker elements. Some stuff that's mentioned in issues like 2 and 3, for example, you can kind of read as a little bit darker, but it's really interesting the way that this story is shaped out, because while the entirety of the Malibu universe for me did seem a little more generic superhero stuff, even though it was extremely varied, so maybe generic is not a good word to use. I think Prime really set itself apart because of its main character. And basically, Prime is a kid, he's in middle school, his name is Kevin, and one day he learns that he has superpowers. And his superpower is basically the ability to create this exterior shell around his body that he subconsciously controls into looking basically like an oversized Superman type character. And, you know, the way he acts towards villains, and there's very different types of villains in this book, really is based on what he has read in comic books and what he has seen in Saturday morning cartoons. And I think that's awesome because, I mean, obviously not now as a grown man, and I'm sure many of you as an adult may not see it this way, but think about a time when you were a kid reading comic books or watching Saturday morning cartoons, and you wanted to be, whatever, Batman or Captain America or He-Man or Lionel or whatever, right, from Thundercats. Think about those times. Like, if you wanted to be those heroes, if you played like superheroes with your siblings or your friends, that's exactly what you would do, right? You would imitate their personality, the way that they speak, the way that they react towards one another. And that's basically what Kevin does in this book. And I think it's absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Because, of course, people writing these books aren't kids, they're grown-ups. You know, and we oftentimes hear about, like, oh, how can this guy write this female character? How can this woman write this male character? How can Bendis write Miles Morales? He's not, you know, a young biracial kid. He's an old white man. And you know what? It doesn't matter. All it takes is a good writer to be able to place themselves in this kind of mindset. And of course, I'm sure the writers of this book, the creative team of this book, kind of recalled a lot of maybe their personal experiences growing up as kids and reading comics and watching Saturday morning cartoons. And it really shows, because I think they really get the voice right in a lot of places. Even the language, there's not a lot of terribly outdated language in here, although maybe a couple of words here and there. And I think it really speaks a lot to the book. So let's talk about, issue 1 we've already discussed, but I'll recap issue 1. When the book kicks off, we have Prime confronting a basketball maybe it's just a general PE coach at his school, claiming that he's a pedophile. Of course, there's a bunch of girls around, and they never explicitly show anything that would say that this guy's a pedophile, but you can kind of guess based on Prime's reaction to the whole thing. After he deals with the coach, he goes to Somalia again and fights these Somali insurgents, helps the U.S. military, and as that's going on, we learn to see that maybe Kevin doesn't have full control of his abilities. We don't really know this Kevin yet either, right? All we know is that it's this massively muscular superhero. And after this battle, he kind of starts disintegrating because the shell that he creates is kind of made out of this genetically modified sludge, if you will. It's never kind of explicitly said exactly how this whole thing works, but we do learn a little bit more about it in the next couple of issues, and we'll get to that. So he flies back home from Somalia, kind of flies through a window, and then we see his sludge body disintegrate, and here's this little kid. And that's kind of the oh crap moment, right? You're like, oh man, here I thought this was kind of like a Superman analog, and now we have this twist in the story. How is that going to play out through the rest of the book? And it does. It's extremely important throughout the entire run of the series, and in particular, I think, these first, like, even beyond the 6 issues. I'm only talking about 6 issues today, but I would say maybe even the first 10 or 15 issues of this book, it's particularly important. And it does play a role throughout the character's history as well, onto the rest of the series, into the second series, into the crossover events that we have later on in Malibu, because he always has this kid's mentality on what a superhero should be. And it plays upon some of the manifestations of the Prime armor that we see as well. So this original one looks a little bit like I said, an oversized Superman, an overly muscular Superman, or maybe even a Captain Marvel type character. Some of the character design, I would say, maybe is similar to both of those characters as well. But later on, we do see him manifest different kinds of Prime bodies. Some of them cooler than others. For example, he does have a battle with a particular being, and he gets some inspiration for a new Prime body when he learns to control things a little bit better, and bases him on that, so it's like the Rogue Prime. He's got, like, you know, long hair, and looks a little more Viking-like, I guess. I don't know. There's at one point, after Marvel ended up purchasing Malibu characters, he becomes Spider-Prime, so he has a run-in with Spider-Man, and as a result, kind of bases his new body on Spider-Man's look. So it's much smaller, much slimmer, does look a little bit like Spider-Man, but with some Prime elements in there as well. I think it's very cool. In fact, the first time we see these kind of new Prime bodies is within the scope of what we're talking about today. Within issue 6, he creates a new Prime body for a particular mission. But very cool. And of course, this whole thing in the background is being overseen by a mysterious agency. At first, we don't know if it's government or what, but as we learn pretty quickly, it's not necessarily government, although there were some government ties. Now, issue 2 does bring things down to a little more ground level, where Kevin is kind of dealing with the repercussions of his actions in the first issue, and he doesn't really know what to do, right? Because he's gained these superpowers. He thought he was indestructible, and he even does that in his sayings, right? Like, every time he goes into battle, he's like, yeah, it's Prime time. And sure, it's kind of cheesy, but, like, if you were a kid, wouldn't you do that too? Think about it. Like, all of a sudden, you've got the ability to fly, you're extremely strong, you can lift tons of weight, you can punch through walls, like, hell yeah, it's Prime time. You know what I mean? Like, perfect. So, Kevin's kind of dealing with the repercussions of his abilities. He tries to hide these abilities from his parents. His parents find him kind of naked in this kind of around some sludge, and he doesn't know what to do. And his parents are like, what are we doing? He needs to go see a doctor. And the dad's like, he doesn't need a doctor. And the mom's like, yeah, he needs a doctor. Kind of like typical parents would do as well. And as we learn a little bit later on, there is a reason for this. And the reason is the dad is actually kind of aware of what's happening to his son, because his dad kind of was involved in some of the experimentation as to why Kevin began to manifest these Prime bodies. And it's kind of a long ways in the past. Why the mom isn't aware so quickly in these issues, I'm not quite sure. As we learn in issue 3, the dad was part of the military, so he did have his family involved in this genetic testing. There was a fertility doctor that we met in issue 2. And really, he's the same guy from issue 1, but we really meet him in issue 2. And he was a fertility doctor who wanted to create kind of like super soldiers for the military. And so he did a lot of genetic modification with them. In fact, after Prime finds Organism B, who's this like giant monkey-looking type thing. Maybe even not monkey. I don't even know what you would describe it as. It's very strange. It's for those of you that have read the Max, it almost looks like a deformed version of the Max, right? That like hunched over, really giant, muscular thing with these ginormous teeth, and it's very odd looking. But Organism B really has a little bit more control over his abilities than Prime does. And we don't know a whole lot about Organism B. He's kind of a one-and-done thing. But it does set up kind of this whole genetic modification experimentation on children. And as we learn after his battle with Organism B, he's brought back into the lab of the scientist, who is very willing to tell Kevin exactly the origin story of the Prime program. I mean, they never explicitly call it the Prime program, but that's what we're going to call it here. In fact, it was pretty funny, and you know, by the time this book came out, Betamax was kind of done, and the joke is kind of played into the story, because, you know, these experiments were done 13 years in the past of when the story is beginning, so Betamax was still a thing. If you don't know what Betamax is, kids, look it up. Those of us that are a little bit older may remember Betamax. In fact, some of you may still own some Betamax Betamax videos, and if you do, please share the pictures with me on Twitter, because I want to see those, at Geekvine. And so he pulls up his Betamax of all the recorded experiments, and kind of shows Kevin, and apparently there were a ton of boys and girls that were being experimented on. This scientist has put like genetic markers within all these kids, so that he would be able to identify those kids that were actually involved in the experiments. And Kevin's not having it. He doesn't believe any of this. He ends up breaking out of the lab, but not before the doctor's assistant also becomes kind of this Organism 8 type creature. And he also has a little more control than Kevin does, but not quite, right? So these creatures are able to kind of manifest things out of their sludge shell, if you will, whereas Kevin can't really manifest those things yet. Right, he does have the ability to create very normal-looking bodies. And by normal, I'm putting that in quotes because, I mean, he's a giant, like, 500-pound, uber-muscular man who's, like, 7 foot tall. But, you know, the rest of these creatures can't do that, right? They all look like very deformed humans in a way. And the lab assistant can, like, project tentacles from his chest out of these sludge things. And he and Prime duke it out. He ends up ripping off a piece of Prime's cape, which of course is not a real cape, because as it rips off, it becomes this organic sludge, and Prime's very confused, which, I mean, he shouldn't be. He just saw the tapes. He should realize he's kind of a genetic experiment. But he doesn't want to believe any of this stuff. So he heads off and wants to find one of his childhood heroes, Hardcase. And as we learned from when I talked about that particular book a few weeks ago, Hardcase was a superhero, one of these Ultras. He was in the squad, a team of Ultras, one of the first, who was killed after fighting this particular, xenomorph-looking creature. And he's retired from being a superhero. He's an actor. So he goes to this movie set, believing that he'll find Hardcase there, and instead finds Prototype, who is, another Ultra, that's kind of thrown in kind of oddly in the story. I kind of understand what they were trying to do. But it felt a little off because we really hadn't seen Prototype before this. And just to kind of throw him in, it felt a little weird, right? It doesn't even tie into the Prototype book itself, because I don't think the Prototype book had even come around. And Prototype's kind of an interesting character. He's, how would I describe him? I mean, the easiest thing to say would be like Iron Man, except he's not the genius creating this armor. He works for a corporation that created this armor for him. In fact, he's kind of a little kid. I mean, he's older than Kevin is, but he's a young Spanish kid who's a gang member, and there's some kind of hints as to the fact that that's who this kid is. We never really name him by name, but he really tries to, he wants to better himself, right? So he's working for this corporation, being kind of their shill, and his ability is the ability to kind of generate energy from his own body out of nothing. As a result, he's put in this armor, and he is the battery for this armor, right? So that's kind of where the Iron Man similarity comes in. Whereas Iron Man has the little thing in his chest that powers his armor, Prototype is kind of the battery himself, right? That's his ultra ability. And so as a result, they can create basically cyborgs, or a cyborg suit for Prototype that's much smaller, much more compact. It looks more like a suit, like an Iron Man suit, that is powered by the wearer himself. And that's pretty cool. And they duke it out. I think the cool thing about the interaction between these two is that they're both very young kids and don't really know how to be heroes, right? And Prototype kind of deals with things in a different way. So as they're duking it out in this movie studio, you know, they're destroying everything. They're destroying everything. And Prime's like, oh, like he tries to overcompensate with his abilities. So he's like trying to stop this bus hanging from a crane from falling. So he goes and grabs that. Well, of course, Prototype doesn't have that strength. So instead he chooses to grab people and get him out of danger. Not necessarily because that's the right thing to do, but because it will make him look better. And it'll make him look like a hero. And that's kind of the journey that Prototype goes through. And maybe at some point I'll do a discussion on Prototype, because that's a pretty interesting book as well. But I like the dichotomy between the two characters, right? Because they're still learning to cope with these newfound abilities and what the world expects them to be. But they're not quite there yet, right? In fact, I just went to see Into the Spider-Verse. And that's kind of a central theme of that as well. And really the hero's journey that Miles goes through in that movie reminds me a little bit of Kevin's journey in the Prime book. So if you like that movie, you might want to check this comic book out. Maybe that's how I sell it to you. Go check this comic book out. It's kind of like Spider-Verse, but not at all like Spider-Verse. Anyways, through this battle, of course, Kevin begins to lose his ability to hold on to his Prime body, just like we saw in the first issue, after fighting the Somali insurgents. And he flies back home, and as he's getting there, he crash lands. His dad's been out looking for him because he's been missing for a little while. And his dad sees him, and that's when we kind of learn, like, hey, the dad knows something, right? Because he's like, hey, listen, Kevin, don't worry about it. I'll protect you. You know, clean yourself up. Put on these clothes. There'll be no experimentation on you. And then you as the reader are like, wait a second. What's happening here right now? The dad really does know something. As all this is happening, there's kind of a connection to Mantra, which is another book. And that connection felt a little forced in the way that it occurred here. And I mean, you probably want to have read Mantra before you read, the end of issue 4 maybe, but even issue 5 when things really heat up with this demon that shows up. And the demon is drawn to this movie set because of the fear and the anger and the confusion that people are feeling, right? It kind of draws its strength from people's bad emotions. Kind of like a typical 80s or early 90s horror flick, like Nightmare on Elm Street or something, right? Where Freddy Krueger gets his power from the fear of these kids. And because of this movie studio, he goes into one of the studios and there's a drawing of Maxi-Man, and he possesses this drawing of Maxi-Man and becomes a full-fledged iteration of Maxi-Man, whom Prime ends up fighting in issue 5 of the series. Now again, I don't know what the connection is to Mantra, because I didn't reread Mantra as a result of reading issue 5 of this. There may be some kind of connection, but I thought what was cool was having this demon possess Maxi-Man, because then we learn a lot more about Kevin. And Maxi-Man is that, like, He-Man type character, or maybe Thor. He was a cartoon character that Kevin used to watch as a kid. In fact, when he's having an interaction with his mom puts the show on TV to see if it'll make Kevin feel better. And Kevin's like, I don't even watch cartoons anymore. I'm a grown man. Because, of course, you know, he's in his prime body. He thinks he's becoming an adult. And maybe that's part of the reason why he's having issues controlling his abilities. But, of course, his mom doesn't know any of this. And that's really the introduction to Maxi-Man. So in issue 5, he does fight Maxi-Man for the majority of the issue, eventually defeating Maxi-Man by essentially using his entire energy reserves. And as all this is happening, the dad calls Colonel Samuels, who was the military liaison for these genetic experiments that we learned about in issues 2 and 3. And the colonel comes in with the military in basically pretending to be this like vegetable company. They're driving like vegetable delivery cars, and they grab Prime and take him to a military facility to do some experimentation. And the dad's like, listen, no experiments, just I want him to get better. And the colonel's like, yeah, whatever, don't worry, no experiments. But of course that's not the case at all, and this is kind of an oversized issue. Issue 5 is a 40-page special, so there's a whole lot of story in here, right? So you get to learn a lot about Maxi-Man and Kevin, but you also learn about Colonel Samuels and his dad's connection to Prime's newfound abilities, and kind of the reason why he has become Prime is after the incident that we learn about in Strangers Number 1, it sort of helps Kevin ignite some kind of inner ability that helps him control these genetic modifications that were done on him as a fetus, as an infant. And of course, the Colonel actually does help him quite a bit because he does want to use Prime as a weapon. There's this whole background mystery about a secret moon base, and the Colonel wants Prime to go to the moon base and investigate it. We're gonna end the discussion of this book before that, but it does tie in into Breakthrough Number One, which is another issue, another book from Malibu, and, we do learn a little bit more about this moon base. But he wants Kevin to go to the moon base. He's like, look, you're a superhero now. You've got all these abilities. You don't wanna help your country? And Kevin's like, eh, I'm not sure. He's like, I want you to meet somebody. So they go to the White House, and Kevin meets Bill Clinton and Chelsea Clinton. I thought that whole thing was pretty hilarious. And, you know, Bill's Bill, and Chelsea's super friendly because she's also a kid at this time with Kevin, so they have a good interaction. But as Kevin leaves, the Colonel and Bill Clinton have a discussion about this whole thing, and Bill just kind of turns completely, and he's not the nice guy that he pretends to be on TV, for example. He's just a complete douchebag. He's like, yeah, you need to do whatever you have to get this kid so we can use him as a weapon. And I like that whole thing, right? So it's a little dated because, you know, Clinton was the president. How long ago is this? 25 years ago? But it's cool to see either way, right? I think sometimes it's hard to keep within a particular book when you have dated references like this. Like, for example, I know, like, Obama's appeared in comics before. And, you know, most comics tend to shy away from this by using some kind of generic name person, or not even naming a president. Maybe just throwing a president in that looks like whatever the current president is. And, either way, I thought that the interaction was cool. Because the one thing about the Malibu universe was that it was kind of one of those world outside your window kind of things, right? And it worked well. Had you been reading this then, if you can kind of skip the fact that it's Bill Clinton and that this happened 25 years ago, the story progresses regardless. And, so, you know, Prime's taken to this military facility. They were experimenting on him. And of course, as we learned in the first issue and into the second when he fights Organism 8, is that his main weakness is that he has to be able to breathe within his Prime shell. And sometimes he's not able to do that, and that's part of the reason why he loses power. So the military is doing experimentation on how to get him to breathe through his shell when he goes to outer space to go visit this moon secret base. And so they do some experiments on him. They, like, tie tubes up to him. And as a result, we get this new Prime body, which is kind of like, it looks like a metal alloy version of Prime. Kind of cool looking. And now, you know, Kevin has the ability to breathe even in a place where he can't breathe, right? Because the size of his Prime body is so huge, he can house, like, oxygen tanks inside it where he himself can breathe inside the shell. And I thought that was kind of cool the way that was presented as well. And by this point, of course, Kevin's dad is extremely pissed off. You know, the military is using, like, holograms to make Kevin think that he talked to his dad, but it wasn't really his dad. It was a kind of a projection. The dad is very, very weary of what's going on with the military, and he kind of begins to tell the wife some of his involvement in Kevin's origin story, and I thought it was really well done. The book is fantastic. The art is great throughout. Sure, there are some character designs that may be a little dated, that wouldn't have been dated, you know, back then, but maybe are a little bit now. But I think if you look a little beyond that, I think Prime embraces some of the cheese, right? I was talking to, who was I talking to about this? Aaron. I was talking to Aaron Bell about this from the Absolute DC podcast. We're talking about, the CW Elseworlds crossover, which I loved, and he loved much less. He didn't love it at all. And, one thing that I said is, look, one thing that makes the shows great is that they embrace the cheese. Because, you know, now comics have gotten a little more serious. They try to do more with their characters. And some writers in particular more than others, where they try to really change things. And update the characters quite a bit, make things more serious. But ultimately, like, I think a lot of the, what made comics really great for a long time was the cheese factor. And, you know, I talked at the beginning of this episode about how Prime reminds me a little bit of some of the Silver Age stuff. If you ever read Silver Age comics are extremely unique. Extremely unique. I think of, like, Bob Haney stuff, for example, that he did over at, like, Detective. And, it is extremely crazy. But you know what? They're fantastic issues to read because they're so insane that they kind of live up to their insanity, right? And that's what makes comics cool. That's what made comics cool back then. It wasn't just, I guess another literary form. It was literally a form of entertainment for kids. And what has changed comics throughout the years is that people that grew up reading these types of comics as kids grew up and wanted to write and draw their own comics. And as a result, they changed comics because they wanted to see, well, what else can I do with this character that's beyond this? or how would this particular event and this crazy-ass comic that makes no sense impact the character in the future? And so we've seen a lot of character growth for the majority of comic book characters over the past, I mean, maybe 40, 45 years, I would say. Definitely since the early 80s, when things became a little darker and grimmer. And I think it's been fascinating to watch the whole growth. But really, Prime embraces that, like, Silver Age mentality, where it's just like, it's fun. It's a kid who wants to be a superhero, and all of a sudden he has these abilities, and what does he do with them? Well, of course, he tries to imitate the comics and cartoons he grew up loving. So it's pure perfection. I loved it. This series, I'm going to continue reading it. I'm not going to probably do another Throwback Thursday on Prime itself, but I will continue reading it, and I hope that you will as well. If you've read this book before, or if you want to read this book before and want to chat with me about it, Twitter is the best place, at GeekVine. You can always email yell at comictalk.today. That's going to wrap up this episode. I'll be back tomorrow. I'll be doing some listener feedback. I got some really great feedback this week, and I'll be doing a little bit of news also for tomorrow's episode. I guess right now I'll announce some of the things that's coming up. So I've got some folks that are going to be joining me on a regular basis on the podcast. All this will begin on Monday, January 7th. Over the next week or so, I'll be publicly posting a calendar of episodes. So you will know literally weeks and weeks and weeks in advance what days this podcast is coming out, what the topic of the podcast will be. And I think it's going to be really great. I'm going to be having Dustin coming on the show. He's going to be doing the episodes on Tuesday and Fridays. He is going to be taking over the news segments, and they're going to be kind of short news headline type things, so you can get your comic news in and out and not be bugged down by my extremely long diatribes on news discussions. However, those will still happen. Those will be on the calendar, so you'll see those when they come out. I will also be bringing on Dewan and JC from the Collecting Valiant podcast. They're going to be joining me for, I haven't decided yet, probably every 2 weeks. We're going to do a collector's corner where we're going to talk about hot books, books to look out for, things like that. So I think that'll be really interesting for many of you. And there's going to be some new segments popping in. So we're going to be really making this podcast kind of what I originally wanted it to be, where there's tons of new segments all the time, and I hope there'll be a little something for everybody. So stay tuned for that. I'll be posting that calendar on Twitter when it comes out, and maybe in the show notes at some point I'll put a link to it as well. That's going to be it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. Of course, leave us some feedback, leave us a review on your favorite platform of choice, and as always, share this with a friend, especially if what I tell you makes you angry, because I love the angry comments. If I remembered sometimes to read the emails that I get, I would, but sometimes I forget, and sometimes I get some very angry emails, and thank you all for those, because it generates some great discussion in the back and forth and the email thread, and maybe one day I'll remember to start talking about those publicly. Anyways, I'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening, and I will catch you then.